Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Good morning, Jacob's Well. Hey there, good to see you all here today. Beautiful, sunny Sunday. I'm Greg Meyer, and to spend some time with you folks. So if you haven't totally unnerved each other by staring at each other's eyes, give you a chance to do it. Welcome to our podcast listeners as well. Glad to have you with us. You will find on the back of your Sunday paper is an outline. You're welcome to follow that along. Some people do, some people don't. It can be helpful for reasons that you wouldn't even suspect. And if you're listening to the podcast, you can find it right on the second page of the description on the podcast, and you got everything already filled in. So that's for people that are cheating. I know there are some people who like sit down as soon as they come in, they like try to guess at what all the fill-ins are. You can, if you did that, you can tell me afterwards whether you're right or not. Anyway, so Paul made you look into each other's eyes, maybe you did that, maybe you didn't. There's something good about that. I mean, I think as we grow up, we tend to do that. We realize we need to, you know, look people in the eye. As a child, we were probably coached to do it. If you have children, you probably are teaching them to, you know, look me in the eye when you talk to me, or look your teacher in the eye, all that kind of stuff. There's something really important about that. When we look at another person in the eye, I think we really see them and we're really seen. That's why it's unnerving, maybe, because we're really seen and we're really seeing that person. I think we discovered the other person's humanity. I was listening to a podcast that someone shared from the Reveal podcast, and it was about the white supremacist movement and so on. And a man named Christian Picciolini, who was a white supremacist for 8 years and got himself out and started an organization called Life After Hate, talks about his last moment, the thing that made him realize he couldn't do that anymore. He and his gang were beating up a black man, and he was near death. And this guy is, you know, down on the ground, and through his swollen eyes, just opened his eyes a little bit and made eye contact with Christian. And he saw something there that he could not walk back from. It just awakened a part of him. He saw the humanity of a person, even though he had trained himself to despise that person. And he could never, ever, he said, it's the last act of violence I ever committed, and within a year he was out. We discover something about ourselves. There's something highlighted in there when we do that very elemental thing of seeing another person for who they are. And the thing is, we not only see the other person for who they are, we all of a sudden see ourselves for who we are at the same time. So last week, this is the second week of this focus on human eyes. And last week I put a thought out there, a proposition out there that I want to carry forward, so I just need to fill you in on it. And that is this, and it's on the top of your Sunday paper, is this: I propose that compassion is the truest measure of your humanity. Compassion is the truest measure of your humanity. I think it's something we kind of intrinsically know. We maybe aren't quite sure why, but if you think about it, just to kind of generally establish that point, when you do question a person's humanity, you know, and we all do that, or we hear it in the news and the movies, books and stuff like that, what are you actually thinking about? You're talking about that person probably failed to show some basic compassion to another person. It's that lack of compassion that makes us question a person's humanity. I think that's true. If you want to know more about that and kind of get a better feeling for that, listen to the podcast from last week. But part of the idea here is that your humanity is actually very, very important to you, and you know it. Now, it isn't the kind of thing most of us stop and think about very often. Like, you know, how much humanity do I have? But it's always registering there in the back of our minds. There's something inside of us that lets us know, among all the details, all the trimmings of our life that are going on and coming out, you know, going on and going by in our lives, that there's something very elemental about who am I? What is my character all about that actually is more important than all those other things? And I do not want to lose that. I do not want to give up on that. It tends to get clouded over. We tend to chase all these other things. We spend most of our time and energy chasing other things, and we know that intrinsically, we know there's a conflict between those other things and this basic humanity that we are looking for in ourselves and we're seeking in other people. And when we weave compassion into this formula, we're realizing then if that humanity isn't a project that we can take on ourselves. Compassion really only happens in relationship, doesn't it? It can't really be found or discovered without other people. It's something that we do together. So you'll find this on your paper, but this is probably a no-brainer, but I think it just needs to be kind of put out there for us to understand it. And that is, first of all, to fully see another person is to humanize him. When I fully see you for who you really are, the best I can, I am humanizing you. And when I humanize you, when I see you fully, I see myself more fully because of that, and that humanizes myself. By humanizing you, I humanize myself. And then that becomes a cycle, doesn't it? That we see the humanity of others, and that somehow awakens humanity within us, with which now I am less reserved, more able, more willing to look at you for who you are, which then helps me deal with that part of myself again. We bestow this humanity upon one another. And that is what is growing in this cycle, I believe, is our capacity for compassion. Our capacity for compassion. Because compassion is hard stuff. It has such an easy, kind of curved view of it. We think about it as, well, it's being nice, isn't it? I mean, being compassionate, it's doing good things to people. It's being a good person. Yeah, it is that, but it's something way, way more. It's something way bigger than all that. Compassion as described in the Bible, and as we talked about this last week, and as we carry it through in our own language, the words that we use for compassion, this being with others in their suffering and this, kind of feeling that knot in your gut that just calls out to you and says, you have to do something. You have to be there. You have to recognize a situation, a person, like Christian Piccioloni did with that black man he had beaten up. That sort of thing, that capacity is something that we want to have more alive in us. And it isn't easy. And and as basic as compassion might be to us as human beings, we know actually going there, risking that, having that be sort of the way that we look to interpret and to live out our lives, that's very counterintuitive. It's very countercultural. I mean, just this willingness to suffer with other people does not sell toothpaste real well, all right? It's just not the curb appeal of what we want life to be like. We want it to be prettier. We want it to be more pleasant. We want it to sparkle. Now, here's the point of that. It isn't that you have to suffer to be human, or that you have to want to suffer, or you have to be with other people in their suffering. It isn't a have to. The point is that this hard and often very dark part of who we are as human beings is intrinsically part of who we are as human beings. It is a big piece of our humanity. And we can't truly know each other, we can't truly know ourselves, if we are not willing to know that part as well. Or as it is on your outline, compassion does not seek out suffering, but it is not afraid of being in its presence. And that is what is so hard about compassion. Compassion doesn't seek out that suffering, doesn't seek out all that tough stuff, but it is not afraid of it. And it knows that to truly know and be known, that suffering, that pain, that hurt has to be part of who we are with one another and who we are willing to non-anxiously, willingly, openly be with one another. Let me give you an example of this that maybe helps. I love the wilderness, the outdoors sort of thing. I don't get as much of it as I'd like to, but it just really speaks to me. It's kind of my home away from home. The main places I do it, I would say in recent parts of my life are sailing out in like wilderness areas and then in the Boundary Waters. The Boundary Waters is probably the greatest example of it. Now, we all know the Boundary Waters on a perfect, picture-perfect day, but, and who wouldn't want to be there, right then and there? But what about those not-so-perfect picture days, Yeah, when it's raining, when it's cold, when it's windy. Okay, so I have this reputation When I'm out in the wilderness, several people have said this to me, Greg, the worse the weather gets, the happier you get. It's not entirely true, but it's kind of true. the thing is for me, and why? Why do I like that so much? Why do I get drawn to that so much? Is that I really love the wilderness. And there's something about me that just understood that if I really love the wilderness, I need to love all of it. If you didn't have that cold, if you don't have that wind, if you don't have that rain, if you don't have those miserable conditions, the things that we perceive as miserable, those wilderness areas would not be what they are. I mean, yeah, upper 70s, sunny, not humid, no bugs. I mean, I'm all for it too, all right? I'm sure I'm actually happier then. But you don't get to pick and choose. If you love the wilderness, you got to love all of it. In some level or not. And if you want to really know the wilderness, you need to know those parts. So, yeah, it's raining, spend some time in your tent, read the book for a while, but then gear up and get out. Experience it. What is that like when the rain is hitting the water as you're paddling through it? The dripping leaves on the portages and your boots and your socks are soaked, and you see the salamanders come out on the rocks that night because it's 50 degrees and raining. And that's something that you want to discover, too. So this is exactly the same with your relationships. Unfortunately, I'm better at this with wilderness than I am with people. I would rather you clean up a little bit. I'm working on it. But it's the same with people. It's all of us. If you're going to really love another person, you got to love all of them. And if you're not willing to see all of them, you don't maybe really love them. I think that's one of the reasons why an affair is so much more alluring than the marriage or committed relationship you're in, because you can keep the affair at a pleasant level. You get to pick and choose what you share and what you experience with each other. You can keep it kind of nice and neat, but that relationship you've had for your life, well, you get the whole thing. You don't get to pick and choose. But that's real, isn't it? That's the real thing. That's what it means to know another person, to embrace each other's humanity, and to be there with each other. Yeah, our lives are too much about highlight reels. We want the creme de la creme for our playlists. But I think the world calls us into this place of compassion, this place where we know and are known, and we're not afraid of being in that place of suffering with one another. So compassion has its two sides. The two sides, and we talked about this last week, there is the being with another person, and then there is the taking action. And really, there's something missing if we don't have both of these. If I'm not willing to really be with you, there's probably something missing in my compassion. But if all I am is with you, and I'm not moved in order to try to work for justice, for help, for support of you, then my compassion kind of is in question, isn't it? That said, both are very real, but being with, and this is really important, these are not two choices. It isn't either be with or take action, or it's not be with and then hurry up and take action. It is always being with. Being with is a foundation. Being with is where compassion starts and where it finishes. And taking action, while taking action is probably essential and an important part in some way in most experiences of compassion, at the same time, taking action is a means to, not a substitute for being with. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But this is important for us because it is so easy to use our busyness of helping out and doing something to avoid fully knowing the one that we serve, avoiding the truth of their humanity, only taking the highlight reel and going on. It's easier for me to try to be a hero than it is to actually know what you are going through and to know what an appropriate response is, know what you're actually needing from another human being that cares for you and loves you. And so we reduce each other to a fix or to a project instead of a human being. And we take on that role that we often, in fact, and probably normally cannot fulfill, this role of fixing the other person. And so we set ourselves up for failure. We discourage ourselves from ever reaching out and really knowing and being compassionate with another person in the future. So basically, and this is, aren't you glad I'm finally getting around to what I want to talk about today? So we need better questions. We need a better question than what should I do? And this, when we want to humanize ourselves and others, we need to look at each other and have a better question than what should I do? And I want to suggest that I don't think this is going to take so long, so don't panic. What are some of these better questions? The first one comes from our Care IQ. We spent a long time last year in talking about Care IQ and did a review of it this year. But Care IQ has one fundamental question that everything spins off of, and I think it's the right question for here too. A better question than what should I do is, what is my role? Compassion identifies and is with this other person and asks, what is my role? Now, to discern your role isn't all that easy. This is something you really gain experience in and you learn how to do throughout your life. But a couple of things. First of all, you listen. And you listen to understand, not to be understood. Okay? You listen for the other person's frame of reference. You listen long enough that you're not just hearing what they're saying according to your frame of reference, but according to their frame of reference. So to get there, the first thing is to listen. The next is to be patient, all right? And don't go to taking action yet, because that's what you want to do. You want to leap there right away. Hey, I stopped and I listened for a little bit. Now I'll tell you what to do. No. Be patient. So after you listen, after you're patient, then breathe. Do you get the feeling that I'm telling you to slow down? Right. Breathe. Clear the smoke screens that the other person puts up and that you need to be able to let dissipate so you can see where the real hurt is inside. And so breathe so that you can let your own distractions, your own preoccupations, your own frame of reference start melting away so you can start saying, oh, they're actually talking about something very different than what I thought when I first started listening. Take the time. Now, this is all out the window if this is a medical emergency. Then forget all that and call 911, all right? But that's a different situation, all right? In all these other situations, the most of these places where our compassion speaks to, slow down, listen, be patient, breathe. And then, after you've done that, then venture into asking not the question, what should I do now that I know all this, but what is my role? What is my role? Is it to do something? Is it to simply be there? Do I not have a role? But like I say, it takes a lifetime of experiencing that role. It's my role to gather other people that could be helpful. So I want us to see a beautiful, you may have seen this already because it's bounced around the internet, but a great example of this in real life that is nicely played out. Let's watch this.
I pick up a broken comb, running through my thin gray hair. Though I don't have any plans tonight, I'm not going anywhere. Well, I should have seen this coming.
Come on.
Don't know why I'm surprised.
When the best of us steps up, our nation stands a little taller. We all play for Canada.
We all play for humanity. I'll keep out of the commentary on that. Give them credit, though, for Canada Tire. But, you know, Sunday, what are this, boy, the... Gee, I sure wish I wish he could walk. I can't help him walk. You know, all he really needs is to be able to be with us. How can we help him be with us? What's my role? So another better, in fact, really important question is this. Am I seeking to escape or to embrace my discomfort? Am I seeking to escape or to embrace it? Now, When you are having a problem, and I come, and I'm the one who's going to be with you, and I'm asking, I want to do something about it, your situation makes me very uncomfortable. But where is my discomfort really coming from? Is it from your situation, or is it from what it is making me feel? Maybe even what you're reminding me about in myself. It's something. Take that to group life and mess around with it a little bit. Talk about that. That's an important question, but am I trying to escape it or to embrace it? I think it's really important for us to understand, again, that when we choose our role, when we decide what we're going to do, what only you can do in this situation, it is in order to embrace this person's suffering, their situation, their humanity, not to get away from it, okay? I find it's a really good question. I mean, I know this intellectually, but then I choose a course of action, then I try to stop myself and say, hold it, why did I do that? Am I just like giving myself an out? Am I trying to get busy so I don't have to face this anymore? Or am I actually doing something that this person needs? We're full of doing stuff that make ourselves feel better and don't actually help the person that we're seeking to do it for, at least not as much as ourselves. Let me give you another real-life example that I think fits in between all of these. So long time ago, over 20 years ago, I was in a car accident. In fact, our whole family was in a car accident. Got hit by a dump truck out on a highway. My oldest daughter was hurt notably. She had to go to the hospital. I was the one who was about ready to check out, though. I don't remember anything. They took me to the hospital, emergency surgery the next day. I was in the hospital for about 11 days. Back to... all better now, so this isn't a sympathy story. But on about the third day or so, after surgery and a lot of broken ribs and all that kind of stuff, in a morphine kind of haze the whole time, I'm, you know, sleeping and out of sleep, and they put me up on my side, which was really painful. So I'm sleeping on my side, and I wake up. But because just doing anything more than moving my eyelids hurt so much, I woke up, and I just sort of stared at the empty room for a long time, probably, I'd say 20 minutes or so. But it's late October, the sun is shining on my back, I can feel it, and it was all nice and warm. So after about 20 minutes, like, okay, it's worth the agony of rolling onto my back in order to look out the window. I roll over on my back to look out the window, and there's this friend of mine named Dave sitting in a chair. I said, whoa, where did you come from, you know? And I finally realized, well, like, I didn't know you were there. How long have you been sitting there? He said, I don't know, hour and a half. What? You've been there for an hour and a half? Like, why? I don't know. I just wanted to be here with you. I thanked him afterwards, but of all the visits, all the expressions of love and care that I received, I mean, the stuff from your family, I don't know, it's a different ballpark, but that one impressed me more than anything else. In fact, healed me more than anything else. He just was there. I have this feeling, I didn't ask him this, but like if his lunch break had ended and he couldn't stay any longer and I had never woke up, I think he would have left and just maybe not even let me know, because that wasn't important. He just needed to be there. One of the most profound experiences I've had in my life. But he was willing there, you know, with me, and I was a mess. I had 13 tubes coming in or going out of me, and that was okay. He didn't need to escape me that. He could simply just be there with me. Jesus has this line. He gets into this compassion stuff quite a bit, partly because he's got great fascination with it and partly because he's unhappy about how people aren't doing it. So this passage, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, all you legalistic people relating to the Jewish law at that time. Hypocrites, for you tithe mint, dill, and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, compassion, and faith. If you dig into that, there's a real interesting kind of pun in there. But it is these you ought to have practiced, justice, compassion, and faith, without neglecting the others. The tithing, those ritualistic things are important, but the basics, you're completely forgetting. Justice, compassion, and faith. You blind guides, you don't get anything. And he says, you strain out a gnat and you swallow a camel. We just get it all mixed up. We make our lives about the wrong things and we emphasize those. We think it's so important that we aren't inconvenienced, that we aren't uncomfortable, that the nice things about life, the pleasant things about life are really there. And he says, but when you do that, you're missing the really big things. You're totally forgetting this, these things that build your humanity, that make life real. So a piece for us to hold on to. A third better question than what should I do, that I think sometimes, you know, shortcuts our ability to have compassion, is this. Am I honoring boundaries or am I hiding behind barriers? Ask this question as you're figuring out what your role is, what you should do, who only you can be. Am I honoring boundaries or am I hiding behind barriers? Now, we need boundaries, okay? There are reasons why we get pulled into and abused and are unable to help, and we're just overwhelmed too. There's no way we can respond to all of the needs that are around us, all the calls for compassion around us. We have to establish boundaries, and that's very real. But then we also, maybe even more often, we put up barriers, just the things that say, well, I can disqualify myself. I don't have to worry about that. That's not my responsibility. It's not my job. I don't have to do it. And I think we have to ask, like, which one of these am I exercising right now? You know, one of them, I think, says, okay, in order to be the person I need to be, I have to have this boundary, all right? This is important for me to be faithful in my other relationships and the rest of my life and my responsibilities. The other one is saying, is really triggered by our discomfort, our disgust, our dislike, our lack of preference for something, and so on. And so we build a barrier to separate ourselves from it. I think, and this is on the outline, a way to understand these things is the question that helps you realize this is a boundary issue is this question of what is my role? Let your question of what is my role help you know whether this is a boundary or this is a barrier. And just as a little aside, if you think it's like there's a storm coming and there's thunder happening, the kids have a drum circle going on in the other room, so. It sounds ominous, but. So this question is, what is my role, helps us establish our boundaries in a healthy sort of way. And the other question, our barriers have all kinds of things, and that would be the question says, or the thing that says, well, I don't have the time, I don't have the money, or I don't have the expertise to help you, so I'm out. I'm not going to be there for you. And these are big. The time, you know, like, we let our time rule us instead of us ruling our time, deciding where it is called upon. I know Henry Nouwen, a mentor of mine, talks a lot about, you know, the increment of the 1 hour, the tyranny of the increment of the 1 hour session. Well, I'll help you. I've got 20 minutes, you know, until my next appointment. And that can be real, but we let that rule ourselves in ways. I don't have the money. I would like to do something, but I don't have the money. We spend a lot of time understanding our relationship with finances here in Jacob's Well, and not to support us as an organization, but because that's a huge issue for us and how we live in the world and we express our values. And one of the things when we talk about what we would hope that our money could do for us is one of those lines is always, when I see something that really pulls on my heart, I would be able to respond financially to it. I think that's a hope that all of us would have, that we have a relationship with the money in which we could respond to those things that pull on our heartstrings and we could give towards those things. You know, so if I have this situation, well, I can't do that because I don't have the money to do it. Maybe the real question is, well, what is my relationship with my money? And do I need to get that in order so that I can act out my humanity, I can act out my compassion for it? This other one of being an expert. Well, I don't have the expertise. And we want to, can we make all the world's problems the responsibility of someone with the expertise? You know, someone who can fix it, someone who knows how to do that. Is there not a place for just those of us who are the ones who are there? Maybe your job wasn't to fix it. Maybe your job is simply to be there. Maybe you have the expertise that's needed because it wasn't about fixing in the first place. Which really brings us to the next one. But I want to give a real short example of that. Has anyone here ever seen someone, this is a really strange phenomenon, I know, but someone on a freeway entrance with a cardboard sign? Yeah, okay. How many saw one today? You know, if you were on the freeway, you probably did. You know, need food, need work, you know, whatever it is. All of us here, if you drive at least, you have to decide what you're going to do about them by now. Here's my take. And it really comes from talking to people at Mary Jo Copeland's place, Sharing Caring Hands, and so on. And I think in the large part, it's kind of a racket. these, it's well governed. It's almost like, you know, kind of like a little club, and it's enforced who gets to be at what entrances and so on, and they actually do pretty well. It isn't, you know, you aren't really helping the person. And I know there's exceptions to that, but I understand that that's kind of how it all works. So I don't give anything to them. I take my resources, my time, and so on, and try to help more at the system level. So I'm going to support the organizations that are helping people with the food, with the job, rather than handing out to the people on the corners. Now, that's a short thing, and it's obviously a little bit more complicated than that, but that's what I do. What do you do? So everybody, I assume all of you kind of have figured out something. Talk to a person, maybe that one that you stared at the other a little while ago, but share with each other what it is that you do. Go ahead, take a minute. What do you do with those cardboard signers on the freeway entrances? Okay, there's not a right or wrong on this. But what I would like to do is, like, if you have an element of your story, like either you know what you do or there's a reason or some little piece or some reason, you can either write it on your communication card and let us know who you are, or just say, you know, cardboard signer on the back of your communication card. We're going to do a leftovers podcast on this issue and how it fits into compassion, and we'd love to kind of get your perspective. So give us some fodder, give us some grist for that, and we'll weave you in on that. So put those on your communication cards when you put them, and they'll go on the offering baskets here in a little bit. You know, part of that myth of why, you know, we respond to those barriers, especially thinking experts can be in there, is because we believe in this last myth, this last question that I want to put there, and that is, am I buying into or falling for that myth of improvement? The myth of improvement. You've heard me talk about the tyranny of better a couple of times, probably, if you've been around for a while, always trying to be a better person, helping people be better people. And the problem with that, I mean, like, who's against better? I hope I can be a better person, too. We all want to be better people. But when you aim at it, it just does horrible things to us. It drives us into these corners of comparison and of, you know, trying to fix ourselves and finding all kinds of shortcuts in order to get there but not really be there. And it gives us our, you know, either perceived failure through comparison or perceived success compared to other people that either makes us overly proud or overly insecure. It just says a lot of ugly things to us. And, you know, so we don't talk about better, we talk about growth here. But I think this idea of improvement is the same thing. Whatever made any of us ever think that improvement is always an improvement? It isn't. There's much more important things in life than improvements. And sometimes improvement isn't even applicable to things, but yet it's where we want to go. It's where we want our compassion to happen for other people. That the goal for everything is to fix it. And even if we, you know, try to, which we often can't, we know that there's so many times when there's something that is much, much healthier than improving it. We know that when we look at our children and we try to raise them, we're not trying to improve them. We're just trying to help them to grow and to experience and to try things. We know it when we seek meaning and purpose in our own lives. It isn't about improving ourselves or our situations. It's something that's way deeper inside of that. It's something we're just trying to wake up and let be there. Another story from my own life. About 10 years ago, my dad was 91 years old, and he was done. He was done. His general organ failure, no one particular, but he's 91 years old, and he was at the end of his life. And I was there, my family was there. We were spending time with him, we were saying goodbye and so on. And in some ways, I wanted to do anything I could to improve him. Could we just get him to hang on for hours or days, weeks? I mean, maybe if we did some sort of medical heroics, he could live for another month or who knows, maybe a year. But really, I never went there. I mean, it was the wrong thing. He was ready. It was his time. He did not want me to be focused on improving him so that I couldn't be with him in what he knew he needed to do. The last thing he wanted me to do, the last thing that he wanted was for me to be so focused on what might be that he would have to do what he knew he needed to do by himself. He just wanted me there. He just wanted to know that he did not have to do this alone. There's so many pieces of life that are like that. So many pieces where we cannot do anything without just simply being there, without expectation, without an agenda, without our anxiousness working out, without our need to justify it. Think about this question. This could be a fantastic question for group life as well. If I cannot help you, is there any purpose in my compassion towards you? If I can't help you, is there any purpose in my compassion towards you? What if your or my humanity doesn't ride on getting fixed and getting healed or getting help, but on the simple giving and receiving of compassion? And what if we became experts of simply being with? And then slowly asking that question, what is my role here? Jesus says, what good will it do for someone to gain the whole world, yet give up their life? What can a person give in exchange for their soul? The word for life and soul there is the same word, psuche in Greek. It is a soul. You could easily translate it as humanity. What good would it do for a person to, gain the whole world, but give up their humanity in the process of doing it? I mean, what are you going to do to get your humanity back with all those things? How are they going to provide it for you? It isn't about getting into heaven. It isn't about making God happy with you. It's about you being the human being you could be. It's about being those important things that are inside of you and inside of us. The need for compassion is not small in our world today. I mean, the news these last weeks just slaps us in the face. The things that you know are going on in your own life are calling you constantly, and we almost have to put blinders on ourselves because it's too much. But we need to be able to go there. We need to claim ourselves and our lives. We need to start finding that these purposes that are beyond us, not just the desires that are within us. So vote for humanity, yours and others. Live for it, yours, mine, and the world's. It is where God is calling us to that truth that is behind that threefold cord that we can weave, where we find discover who we really are as we weave ourselves with God and with others in ways that lets us know who we truly are. Pray with me. God, this is tough stuff that we work with, and we speak to you because we know that there is some truth, some understanding, some place within this fabric of existence that we tend to walk in the outside of, that we need to get deeper down into so we understand who we are and who one another is, that we can be the people that we long to be joined and to be connected and to be living and finding life and building a world together with. Help us to be those people. Help us to slow down despite the discomfort of our situations that we feel within ourselves or we see in one another so that we can know and be fully known and there discover who we are and who you are and who one another is. Be with each of us in the struggles. We all are going to be walking into that world in different ways this week, and it's not going to be easy, but it can also be full of joy and celebration. So help us to be those people. And help us to support one another in that passage as well. All this we give to you. And thank you for your love and for your care and your support in our walks. May it be so. Amen.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.